In Vietnam, it's believed a giant frog or toad eats the sun. The Norse Vikings saw a pair of wolves chasing the sun, and when one of them caught it, an eclipse would result. In ancient China, a celestial dragon was thought to lunch on the sun. Italians have a positive theory that flowers planted during an eclipse will have more vibrant colors than others. We may or may not discuss these myths or legends, but we will join the rest of Kentucky in discussing the solar eclipse during this week's Eastern Standard.
I don't know what we're going to talk about when this is over, because this is all we talk about. This is all that's on the radio. It's all that's in the newspaper. And, you know, when customers come in, are you ready for the eclipse? And we're always like, I don't know, you know. So, yeah, we talk about it all the time.
Send your questions, comments, or stories now to WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. In a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard as we discuss the solar eclipse right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. On Monday, August 21st, a little more than a week, all of North America will be treated to an eclipse of the sun. Anyone within the path of totality can see one of nature's most awe-inspiring sights, a total solar eclipse. This path, where the moon will completely cover the sun and the sun's tenuous atmosphere, the corona, can be seen, will stretch from Salem, Oregon to Charleston, South Carolina. Observers outside this path will see a partial solar eclipse where the moon covers part of the sun's disk. And that is what applies to most of us in our listening area. But that is our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. Today we're going to focus on the solar eclipse, of course, using proper eye protection. So we have guests with us to discuss the concept or the topic of the solar eclipse, and we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners, throughout the program. I'll give you our phone number and our email address and the Twitter address and so forth in just a few moments after we introduce our guest. And actually, why don't I start with the guest who is not with us in the studio at the moment. This is Dr. Richard Gelderman, professor of extragalactic astrophysics at Western Kentucky University. Dr. Gelderman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. That's more of a title than I'd expect. But yes, I do study other galaxies most of the time, not the sun. This eclipse is just sort of a side interest.
Okay.
A very big side interest.
And you happen to live on this planet, so I guess that makes it appropriate. Well, thank you again so much for being with us for our program. Also with us in the studio here at Eastern Kentucky University is Ida Bermudez. And Ida is planetarium educator at the Hummel Planetarium at Eastern Kentucky University. Been there almost 2 years. Ida, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
You're the person when folks come over for school groups and events of that type, you're the person who's out there instructing, showing kids around and telling and trying to make it all, bring it all down to earth, so to speak.
Correct. Yes, I'm the one with the star talks and has fun with the kids, activities, events, things like that.
Excellent. Thanks again, Ida, for being here. And Dr. Marco Choca. Am I saying your name correctly, doctor?
Pretty close, yes.
Pretty close. Dr. Choca is a physics and astronomy professor at Eastern Kentucky University. Been here since 1999. Thank you for being here with us this morning.
You're welcome. It's actually always important that we participate in these kinds of events.
Excellent. Well, let's start by, let me tell our listeners how they can get in touch. You can get in touch with our program by sending an email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. And I'll go ahead and give the phone number. We may not get any calls on the air for a while, but if you are inspired to call, please feel free to do so. 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890. We'd be glad to hear from you with your questions, observations about the solar eclipse, maybe stories. And I mentioned in the promotional announcements that we ran before the show, we might talk about myths and legends about the solar eclipse. Is there something that you were taught or that you learned about solar eclipses? And maybe some things you might want to check out, some facts that you think may need fact checking. Why don't we start out by asking our panel of Dr. Choca, Ida Bermudez, and Dr. Gelderman to describe what is a solar eclipse? What causes the phenomenon, and what is it actually all about?
Well, I guess I could give it a start here. We all know that the moon goes around the Earth.
Yeah,
it takes a certain amount of time. And there are conditions under which, as the Earth goes around the sun, the moon finds itself in the middle between the sun and the Earth itself. Now, that doesn't happen all the time because the orbit of the moon is tilted. But under opportune conditions, and it happens about twice a year, they call it the eclipse seasons, the moon will be on a line between the sun and the Earth, right in the middle. At that point, the light from the sun is blocked. That's when you have a solar eclipse. Now, sometimes, if the conditions are just right, I call it the Goldilocks event, the moon is far enough from the Earth and far enough from the sun, and it is big enough to block exactly the sunlight. That's when you have a total solar eclipse. At that point, all kinds of things can be observed, which cannot usually be done. For example, you mentioned the corona, which is the fancy word, Italian word for crown. And it's the atmosphere of the sun, which you cannot usually see directly because the sun is too bright. But when the sun, the disk of the sun is blocked, we can actually see the corona.
Did you say that there are twice a year we generally have solar eclipses occurring?
Yeah, they're called eclipse seasons. Because there are the conditions are such that the moon, which is tilted, finds itself in line with the sun.
But it may not actually create a solar eclipse? It may not be something that is visible?
It usually creates them, but they will be in a different place on Earth because the Earth is spinning around it too. And also the Earth the Earth is tilted in its orbit, so it can happen in the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere, different places.
Maybe you or Dr. Gelderman can tell me, how do we know when there's, I mean, I'm not a physicist, I'm not a scientist. How do you know the actual speed of rotation of the moon and of the Earth, obviously, that is going to actually bring that about? And when did we first know that historically? When did science discover that they could predict when an eclipse would occur?
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and start here. It's been known a long time. People don't realize.
Did Galileo discover that, or
much earlier than that?
Earlier than before.
There
Galileo.
Are reports of people knowing the cyclic nature of eclipses. Chaldeans, what's Babylon now, or Babylon then? You know, about 300-400 years before the Common Era. And people realized that the motion of the sun and the moon and the Earth were cyclical enough that you can predict.
300 to 400 years before the Common Era, before Christ.
Yeah.
Dr. Gelderman?
Yes, and the Mayans also. And we pick this out because we as human beings are excellent at patterns. And so the things that you said, oh, I'm not a physicist, I don't know, well, they didn't either. But what they did do was pick out the patterns. And by noticing, especially with lunar eclipses, a lunar eclipse will come paired with every solar eclipse. So there's also about two of those a year. And that those patterns they were able to work out. And so they could tell you with pretty good accuracy when an eclipse would happen and where it would happen. We have much better accuracy and much better timing now because of all the physics that you alluded to. But just by noting the patterns of nature, they figured this out back before the birth of Christ. And the Mayans as well.
Wow. And when you tell us and when we see that we expect the eclipse to be visible in Richmond, Kentucky, a little after 1 o'clock on Monday, August 21st, we can count on that to be pretty exact. We know you know that timing. It's not like this is expected or that it's a prediction, but it's a fact.
Yes, at our football stadium in Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky, I got that number down pat, 127.24, and you could get it down to the tenth of a second if you wanted to. We are that accurate.
Now, totality. Will you experience totality in Bowling Green, or how will your experience be compared to what we will have up in this part of Central Kentucky?
Yes, we will. We will experience totality, and not to put too fine a point on it, nanny, nanny, boo-boo.
So, yeah, we are jealous.
Yeah, so it is the difference between day and night.
Exactly.
And what Marco said about eclipses I agree with, and either Marco or I could go on not just for the rest of the hour, but for days, because you can teach whole astronomy classes on this type of thing. But when you see a total eclipse, nobody really cares why eclipses are caused when they're watching one, in the same way that no one really cares why the Grand Canyon was formed when you walk up and you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. It is so immense, it is so sublimely beautiful, that you don't sit there and go through geology lessons in your head. You just sit there saying, oh my gosh, nature is the most amazing thing. And that's what total eclipse is about. Total eclipse is just the grandest of human spectacles for nature. A total eclipse, the sun disappears in the middle of the day, is one of these transformational phenomena that is going to be one of the top memories you will ever have in your life.
Now, I've been around a while, and I only remember a couple of solar eclipses, actually observing them. How many do we observe in a given location?
At a given location, again, I know the numbers for Bowling Green. Anyone who says to me, oh, I'm really busy on Monday, the 21st of August, I'll just wait for the next one. If you sit still in Bowling Green, you're waiting till, I believe, the year 2567. That is the future for Star Trek. Even Star Trek is not set that far in the future. If you want to just stay in Bowling Green and see the next total solar eclipse, you're waiting till the 2500s.
Wow.
If you have regrets and you wish you could go back in time, the 1400s, the last one in Bowling Green. So any particular spot on Earth, they are incredibly rare.
But if you are really into solar eclipses and want to see one as soon as possible, when would be your next opportunity after August 20? If you could afford to and physically manage to get to that location, when could you see another?
Okay, like Marco said, every 6 months, but that's because you are still saying solar eclipse. If you say total solar eclipse, you're going to have to be a little bit more specific, because like Marco indicated, not every eclipse is a total solar eclipse. There are many times when the sun is very close to being in line and partially gets blocked by the moon, but not totally. And it's roughly out of every three, there will be two partial eclipses of some type, and for every one total, in round numbers. It doesn't go partial, partial, total, partial, partial, total, but on average over a run, it's about two out of three are partial, not total. So if you want a total solar eclipse, you have to wait on average about 18 months. If you just want a solar eclipse and you could travel anywhere in the world, about 6 months.
Okay.
Almost exactly 6 months.
Fly your Learjet to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun, as the Carly Simon song indicates. If you could afford to do that, and you're so vain that you would choose to do so. We are talking about the solar eclipse on this week's Eastern Standard. We're going to come back, and I want to talk to Ida Bermudez about how she teaches people about the solar eclipse and what are the questions that she experiences at the Hummel Planetarium on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. We're interested in your questions. Your comments, your stories, myths, and legends you've heard about eclipses. Give us a call, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. We're talking about the total eclipse of the sun on this week's show. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about the solar eclipse that will occur, we're told, with great confidence on Monday, August 21st. And we're interested in hearing from you. Write to us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or call 800-621-8890. We're learning some things, but hopefully have a little bit of fun for the rest of the hour as well. And by the way, we're doing some thinking here. I know that Eastern Kentucky University, and I know Western, you're talking about the football stadium. I guess you're going to gather people in the football stadium, Dr. Gelderman, for the eclipse?
You bet. I'm also director of Hardin Planetarium, our planetarium down here at WKU. and we are just full of activities.
I'll bet. And I'm sure and Ida can tell us about what they're doing at the Hummel. But Dr. Shoka, I know at Eastern there's going to be a viewing. People are invited to come view the eclipse from the observatory, which is right across the street from our radio studios.
Yeah. We have an astronomy deck, an observatory, and we have an area around it. And we will have a few telescopes tracking so they can see this through a filter. Mm-hmm. Let's make that clear. I might do something that probably shouldn't do, but that's okay. I'll try it anyway. I'll do what is called a projection. That is, I'm going to use a telescope with that filter and send the light to a white poster so they can see it without having to bend at the eyepiece. But that, I will make sure that I'm in charge.
And you're the guy in charge of that exhibit.
Because people with glasses will be safe. But they have to remember, the glasses are only for looking at the sun. If you lower your eyes, you got to take the glasses, otherwise you're blind.
I want to talk about the glasses and how to view the eclipse as well on our program today. Ida Bermudez, I'm sure you've got plenty of activities to tell us about at the planetarium, but you, I assume, are involved right now. We see school buses pull up all the time on the campus here, maybe not during the summer, but you're always teaching people about celestial events and so forth. How is the planetarium teaching people about the solar eclipse?
Yes, so solar eclipse for us has been a fun thing to do. It's one of those rare events that we're having, even though we're not having a full eclipse, we're having a partial one. But yes, we do our star talks after our shows, and we kind of talk about what's happening and kind of put that a little bit more in there in our star talks, which tells you what stars and planets are in the night sky at night. But with the solar eclipse coming in, we kind of put that in there a little bit. People come in and ask us questions all the time. They call us asking questions, and now that Madison County is going to be out, we've gotten some teachers saying, well, how can I, you know, teach a little bit? What website should I go to learn more about the eclipses? So we're doing more of the informal kind of fun teaching with all of our events that we've had and we're still having.
And I was over at your planetarium for an event a couple of weeks ago, and you all had glasses you were passing out.
Yes.
And you were doing little demonstrations for children who happened to be there. As a matter of fact, I snapped a picture of you with a globe, and then you had a little ball on a stick that was representing the moon and a light shining on it to show how an eclipse occurred. What about the glasses? I've heard all kind of things about the viewing glasses. Does your planetarium have those available for people who want to use them on the 21st?
Yes, so we've been giving them out at different events. We gave them out when we had the farthest previewing, and we had an event yesterday with the Madison County Library here in Richmond, and we partnered up with them for some events as well. So we were giving them out in different events. We still have some events coming up. We'll be partnering up with the library again and the physics department as well for one of our events. So for those events, we're kind of giving them out the glasses, kind of making sure everybody is safe and has that viewing opportunity with our glasses.
Let's talk a little bit about viewing. I remember, again, at least one solar eclipse as a kid when we were told to, you know, get some cardboard and cut a pinhole in it. And I feel like there was a shoebox involved.
Yes.
At some point, as well as a viewer. And I thought, boy, that was really frustrating because I didn't feel like I was really seeing an eclipse. I was just seeing light shining inside a cardboard box.
Yes.
That's the process that I was describing, the projection. A pinhole in a cardboard box is your most simple camera. That little light goes through. And therefore, the light intensity is low enough that when you have this light hitting the back of the box, you can see the outline of the sun. And if there is the moon in front of it, you can see that part, the outline, a little bit darker. It's a way to visualize it without looking at the sun directly. The nice thing about it, that doing so, you can magnify the image. Mm. It's bigger. You can see it better. On the other hand, if you have your glasses looking up at the sun, you see a very tiny sun up there, which a part... the part blocked by the moon is not as bright, is dark. So, but the glasses have to be worn to look at the sun. Don't even try thinking about looking at the sun without glasses.
And why is that the case? And don't we every day look at the sun? Like, I'm in the car driving home in the evening sometimes, heading in toward the west, and the sun's right in my face, and I'm going, I'm looking right at the sun. What's the difference seeing it during the eclipse or seeing it when I'm driving in the car?
At sunset, first of all, you have more air between you and the sun. It's not as bright.
Okay.
But you don't keep your eye fixed on it for a long time. Okay. If you do, you start seeing colored after images, as they're called.
Okay.
The longer you do, the more chances you have to do permanent damage to your retina. When the sun is straight up, like it will be in this case, it's at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll be pretty high. Less air is brighter. So you don't want to do that. It's not going to be incinerated, but it's not a prudent thing to do because you have the tendency to stay focused on it for longer than you should. So with the glasses on the other end, you'll be perfectly safe.
So it's not like the light has been filtered somehow differently because of the eclipse. It's the same sunlight that we're seeing all the time. We're just seeing less of it.
Yeah, you wouldn't think of looking at the sun directly in the middle of the day.
Dr. Gelderman,
The glance, I think the word I'd want to throw in here to distinguish what Marco is saying versus what you were asking is, of course we glance at the sun routinely, glancing at the eclipse also isn't going to blind you.
Uh-huh.
But you actually don't look at the sun. Even at a sunset, when it's right at the horizon, you really don't spend that much time looking at the sun. You look in the same general direction as the sun, but what Marco's saying is, you glance at the sun, but you don't stare at the sun. The sun is not at the center of your focus looking right at it. And so looking towards the sun, glancing at the sun, those are the distinctions.
Wow. And again, I guess very early on it was learned that could be dangerous, and that can damage the corneas of the eyes. So I certainly don't want to encourage anyone to take on risky behavior on the day of the eclipse. So tell us how the best way to look. Are these glasses that I'm seeing right now, they're just these little cardboard frames that look like they might be from the movie theater for 3D movies or something. Those are really going to protect your eyes if you're looking at the eclipse, Ida?
Yes, those are having they have different film on them. There's some type of, I forget the number always, the welder's glasses. But they will go and filter a lot of radiation out, UV light, a lot of visual light, so it'll be safer for us to be able to look at it. It's that darker film. And then again, like Dr. Markle said, if you go and look down, not looking at the sun, you won't see anything. You're blind. It's pitch dark, so you're blocking a lot of light with those glasses.
I read something. Yes, go right ahead.
The welder's number that she was talking about is welder's glass number 13 or 14, which almost no welders use because, like they both said, when you look through that, you're basically totally blind. Also mentioned blocks a lot of. Well, what we're talking about is 99.9999. That's four nines after the decimal point. Mm. We're talking one part out of a million of the light, the visible light. So, yeah, it blocks a lot. In fact, it out of a million bits of light, it's only letting through one part out of a million. It's very, very, very dark. All the ultraviolet, all the infrared, and 99.9999% of the visible light.
And when we're viewing the eclipse through these glasses, the main thing is that the corneas of the eyes are covered by the lenses of the glasses.
Corneas for ultraviolet light, that's the biggest worry there, is ultraviolet light damages your corneas, and the infrared light, just for heating up, infrared light we often refer to as heat, and the heat of infrared light, kind of boils your eyeball away. It blocks all the ultraviolet, protecting your cornea, blocks all the infrared, and lets through only one part out of a million of the optical.
And we can observe the eclipse through these glasses, or again, as if you have access to the professional quality telescopes that you all have here at
campus.
Well,
any telescope can do it, but it has to have a proper filter fitted.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, it would be much worse because you would have a big giant eyeball looking. So you can burn paper with that.
You know, I had read something about the fact that there were glasses that were really not approved or not up to standard. How do we know you've got the correct glasses and that you're going to be using the correct glasses on the day of the eclipse?
We have suffered through that badly down here in Bowling Green, and mostly it's the worries. John, I can't tell for sure, but I know at my age, I remember the original Tylenol scare, where adulterated Tylenol tablets made us so aware of consumer safety, and there were no little foil caps and safety seals on things until that Tylenol scare way back in the 70s as the Learjets flying to Nova Scotia. And so we're hypersensitive as Americans to that thing. I have yet to run across a pair. What I've run across is a lot of panic, because if I sell you pirated glasses, then I'm unscrupulous enough to know what to print on them to make them look like they're real. So how do you really know? It's a hard call. And luckily, I think the scare is worse than the reality. It only takes one person using a pirated pair that's not up to snuff to be damaged and for us all to regret it. But if I'm unscrupulous, I just print the secret code and the not so secret code on the backside and tell you that it's safe, because if I'm pirating them, why wouldn't I?
So in Bowling Green, though, I assume you have access to those glasses and that your planetarium is passing them out, Hummel here in Richmond?
Yeah, we're dealing with hundreds of thousands of pairs, getting them out to the public.
Let's go ahead. We have a caller on the line, and I hate to leave people waiting too long. 800-621-8890 is our number, but Jerry in Pikeville is on the line. Jerry, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Since we live in Pikeville, I'm just wondering, will I be able to see the total eclipse, or will I have to travel for that?
You will have to travel, Jerry. And you want to travel.
How much eclipse will he see? What level of totality will he have in Pikeville?
So the real answer to that is what you're probably that's something about percent. But when the sun is 99% covered, that sounds great, right? If I tell you you have 99% of totality, you think, wow, that's almost perfect. It is 10,000 times brighter than totality. 99%
wow.
Sounds so good, but to throw cold water on it, 10,000 times brighter. To be anywhere outside totality is the difference between day and night.
Yeah, the even here we have 95.something%. I try to maintain my composure, but I'm going to tell them, look, if you expect to see very dark, you'll be disappointed.
Wow.
It will be interesting because you can see a big chunk of the sun missing if you're looking through glasses, but it will be still daylight. We may lose a little bit of temperature, it'll be a little bit darker, dusk.
The wildlife won't decide that it's nighttime and go to their nests or?
Maybe a little, but for a very short amount of time. When Richard is at, I envy him, it will be dark. It will be nighttime. For 2 minutes and 40 seconds?
At the center line. We are not as close to the center line because the shadow of the moon is a circle. We're up near the top of the moon's circular shadow passing over us. So that shadow passes over us more quickly because only a small piece of shadow at the very top is passing over. So we are about a minute, but down at the center line, just tens of miles away from us, 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
So you are, Dr. Gelderman and Dr. Choka, fans of making an effort to see a 100% totality if you can possibly do so. This is why thousands are converging on Hopkinsville, Kentucky on Monday.
Oh, it's not thousands. It's tens of thousands, if not hundreds.
It's hundreds of thousands.
It is not thousands, no.
To be perfectly honest, if you have not made plan in advance a long time ago, you're not going to happen easily for you.
Might not even get into the town.
No,
huh?
Probably won't.
Jerry, did we answer your question? I guess we did, and I'm sure it was a frustrating answer.
So my answer to Jerry then would be, if he was still on the line, is he probably wants to go down towards below Knoxville. Knoxville is actually just above. The eclipse dips south of us and exits the continent at Charleston, South Carolina. So he has to go probably due south would be the quickest for him. Down just below Knoxville. Knoxville also doesn't see total, and just below Knoxville in that part of Tennessee is where he'll be able to catch totality.
So what about us in Richmond or Lexington? What is the closest, the shortest trip we could make to see totality?
Well, if you Google mapped it, it's Bowling Green.
Wow.
You have to go straight south, and that adds some distance because the eclipse, total eclipse line is basically pointing southeast. So it depends on where you are. If you go straight south, it might be a little bit longer. Maybe going southwest would be better. That's why from Lexington is probably Bowling Green.
We're talking a couple of hour drive.
At right. Least. You guys would go down I-7. If I were in Richmond, I would go down I-75 below Knoxville, have to go past the Knoxville interchange of I-40. To get down lower, and Sweetwater is the town near I-75 that is the closest to that central path for the longest time of eclipse for someone in Richmond. But Marco is completely right. It's all about planning. And there are a lot of hotel rooms around the I-40, I-75 interchanges of Knoxville, and I have not looked, but I would bet good money that they are almost all full, if not all full. And that's out of totality. There are not many hotel rooms south of Knoxville where it's in totality, and you probably don't have a hotel room that you could reserve right now south of Knoxville. And that's because so many hundreds of thousands of people are all going to decide the same thing that you want to decide, John. They're all going to say, like, I could do that in the morning.
Just drive on down.
If they all do it in the morning, then they can't all make it. The roads will turn into a parking lot.
Wow. Okay, that's going to be a fascinating phenomenon of its own, I guess. There's the human element of how people are reacting.
Imagine I-75, which is crowded as it is, and there is a fender bender somewhere. On a regular day, it turns into a 3, 4, 5, 20 minutes delay. On a day like this, it will be hours.
And you'll find yourself watching the eclipse from
the hood of the car.
The hood of the car. Oh, my. This is Eastern Standard. We're going to take another short break. We're talking about the solar eclipse. We have with us in the studio Dr. Marco Choca and Ida Bermudez. And on the line, Dr. Richard Gelderman of Western Kentucky University. 800-621-8890 is our number. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. We haven't heard any legends or myths about the eclipse. Did you learn anything as a child? Has your family or maybe your culture had any traditions that they've passed along about eclipses? Please share those with us in the next 20 minutes or so if you choose to do so. wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guests, Ida Bermudez of the Planetarium, the Hummel Planetarium at Eastern Kentucky University, Dr. Marco Choca, physics and astronomy professor at Eastern, and Dr. Richard Gelderman, professor of extragalactic astrophysics. I like that title. Makes me think of, I don't know, William Shatner or science fiction. Sounds like you're an outer space traveler. But we're talking about the solar eclipse on today's program. And I want to play for our listeners and for all of us a piece you may have heard on yesterday's All Things Considered from NPR. Speaking of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and the Bowling Green area, Lisa Autry of member station WKYU did a story for NPR saying Hopkinsville is billing itself as Eclipseville this summer. During the total solar eclipse later this month, the city will have one of the longest periods of darkness. Lisa Autry reports on how the city is preparing for its big moment in the spotlight, or as Ari Shapiro said yesterday, rather in the dark.
2 minutes, 40 seconds will make Hopkinsville one of the premier viewing spots for the eclipse. For this town of just over 30,000 people, it's a really big deal. As many as 100,000 people are expected in the city, and up to 500,000 more will converge on the rest of western Kentucky. Local parks will become campsites. Schools will close. The National Guard will be on standby for traffic and crowd control. Jonelle Edwards has lived in Hopkinsville since 1953 and has never seen her hometown this excited about anything.
People from overseas coming. I think everything's going to be crowded. It's only going to last a few minutes, but everybody's coming to see it.
The city even hired an eclipse coordinator to try to prepare for it all. People from at least 37 states and 16 countries have made reservations to be here.
Comfort Suite Hopkinsville, Stephanie speaking, may I help you?
At the Comfort Suites, manager Justin Whitehair is busy.
We've been getting calls and inquiries since 2012. So prior to our booking windows even being open.
There are a few hotel rooms left, but those that remain are going for up to $800. Short-term rentals on Airbnb are even higher. Some homes are listed at $10,000 per night. One person is renting out their front yard to campers for $200. Across town, a local diner is commemorating the eclipse. Charlie Powell owns Holiday Burgers.
We've added a new menu item called the Eclipse Burger, which is our 5-ounce burger with an egg on top, so it kind of looks like a sunrise with a round circle around it. So that's our contribution to the eclipse.
His restaurant has only 12 tables, so he's hired a food truck to accommodate the big crowd. But he, like other restaurant owners, is also worried about the possibility of running out of food. All over town, there are signs and merchandise for sale about the eclipse. Griffin Moore owns an art studio and gift shop. She's selling special eclipse drinking glasses, keychains, and ornaments.
I don't know what we're going to talk about when this is over because this is all we talk about. This is all that's on the radio. It's all that's in the newspaper. And, you know, when customers come in, are you ready for the eclipse? And we're always like, I don't know, you know. So, yeah, we talk about it all the time.
According to local legend, on August 21st, 1955, a family reported seeing a UFO land on their farm and aliens emerging from it. Every year, the region holds a Little Green Men Festival. Cheryl Cook heads the local Convention and Visitors Bureau.
I like to say that the aliens came early to pick out their viewing spot.
Cosmic coincidence or not, on the same date, more than 60 years later, the once-in-a-lifetime total solar eclipse is putting Hopkinsville, Kentucky on the map. For NPR News, I'm Lisa Autry.
Thank you, Lisa Autry of WKYU, Bowling Green, Western Kentucky University Public Radio. This is Eastern Standard from Eastern Kentucky University. I'm John Hingsberg, and we're talking about the solar eclipse, and we're encouraging you to call in with your stories of observing eclipses, maybe myths or legends you've heard, your questions, your comments about all this hullabaloo about the eclipse. What do you think about that $10,000 a night for a hotel room? Would even you, Dr. Gelderman or Dr. Choka, would you pay $10,000 to stay so you could observe the totality of the eclipse?
So, John, this is actually a weak point because I've been in this business for a long time, like, I remember Tylenol squares, scares, and
Carly Simon, right?
Remember, yeah, Carly Simon, and that was the 1970 eclipse. Soon as you say Nova Scotia, you know that it was the 1970 total solar eclipse she's singing about.
Uh-huh.
So the thing is I have to embarrassedly admit that until last March, I would have said, well, heck no, that's absurd. Because people have told me for the 40 years I've been in astronomy and doing outreach events that, oh, I went to Madagascar, I went to Antarctica, oh, I, you know, fought past armed rebels in the Sudan to see a total solar eclipse. And I'd say, wow, what an amazing experience. I'm so impressed. I wish I could do such things. But honestly, there was a thought bubble that if you could have seen it, it would have said, what's wrong with you? Don't you have a better way to spend your money? And then I saw one, and it is not a geeky science thing. I could have told you about eclipses, but then I experienced one, and it's like seeing photos of the Grand Canyon and trying to tell someone what it's like to experience the Grand Canyon in person. You can't do it, and until you see it and you are just with your jaw dropped on the ground, standing, babbling incoherently with your human emotions and override, you don't really know what's going on. And what happens when people see one of these, the very first thing is, oh my gosh, when can I do that again? and that's when it starts getting out of control. Right? There won't be any one person at a house at $10,000. They'll share it with as many people as they can possibly share it. But it's certainly more memorable than a ski vacation at Aspen or Vail.
Well, that's certainly,
and at that point, yeah, that's how people spend money.
You certainly put it in perspective. That is very interesting. Dr. Choka,
I'm a little jaded, so I'm keeping, says I wouldn't do it.
Have you seen a total eclipse?
I am like Richard was. I never seen one myself. I don't know what might happen to me if I see one.
Huh.
I probably might do one of these days. I'll go and travel just for the heck of it. But no, at the moment I wouldn't pay $10,000, but never say never.
Ida, have you seen the total solar eclipse?
I have not. So I'm like Dr. Choka. I don't. Right now, I wouldn't. But maybe after experiencing one, I'll be like, yeah.
After a few more years in your career working for Eastern Kentucky University, you can afford that $10,000.
Yeah, I'll put some money into saving for the next one.
Let's go to the phone because Bruce from Georgetown is calling at just the correct moment to do so. Bruce, thank you for calling. Tell us about your experience of a total eclipse of the sun.
Yes, I was in Alaska in 1964 and experienced a total solar eclipse, and it was totally amazing. And there's some things that you haven't mentioned that I would like to bring up. One is Bailey's beads, which fortunately we had someone tell us what was going to happen, and I was outside of Elmendorf Air Force Base up there, and we laid a big sheet on the ground, and just a bed sheet, white bed sheet, and about 20 seconds before the eclipse hit us, first of all, you're beginning to feel unstable. The whole world is seeming to be very weird, and you see the shadows starting to move across the sheet. They're very vague shadows, and those are called Bailey's beads, and they are the shadows of the mountains on the moon. And while I'm saying looking at the sheet, I also completely agree with your comments on projection of the eclipse rather than looking at it from the I took a pair of binoculars and a tripod and a folding chair. The folding chair, I taped a white piece of typewriter paper on the chair, and I can then tilt it to 90 degrees to the sun. And then holding the binoculars with the objective lens toward the sun, I needed a tripod to hold my hand steady because my hand isn't steady enough. And then being about 18 inches to 2 feet from the sheet, I can project the picture onto the paper. And I can even focus it with the binoculars and get a very good image. I don't need a special pair of binoculars, and I could get a very good picture of the moon coming across the sun and the point of totality. And the other thing I'd like to mention is the sudden drop in temperature. You mentioned it briefly, but it was absolutely astounding. 10 or 20 degrees of temperature drop in less than a minute, and the feeling of the cold wind came up, and it was so frightening. It was a feeling of death really upon you,
even though you knew everything, you knew what was going on.
Think of what our ancestors did not know this was going to happen, to suddenly have the sun go out. And this cold, and of course, all the birds had absolutely silenced. The whole world had come to a stop. And we saw the Bailey's beads. This was making you feel unstable on your feet. And it was by putting out the sheet, you could see the shadows moving across. So I never did look at the sun. I'm not going to get even getting any of those, you know, shade glasses? No, I'm going to use my binoculars projecting against a sheet that's held up by a folding chair, and I'm taking my whole family, and we're driving south to be in the path of total eclipse.
Wow. Bruce, that is a fascinating story. Really glad to hear your story. Say this again. Is it Bailey's Beams, like beams, rays of the sun? Is that what we're...
B-E-A-D-S.
Beads. Okay, Bailey's Beads.
Pearl beads on a necklace.
Wow.
Yes, and what's happening on Bailey's... It was named by the guy who finally found the scientific answer to it, was these funny shadows. They're not clear. And he finally described them as the sun coming... peeking through the mountains on the moon. So you're looking at shadows of the mountains on the moon in about 20 seconds before totality. Now, it's something that you won't see that I saw, and I don't think hardly anyone else will have a chance to see it unless they go into an airplane. I happen to be at the near the end of the runway at Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska, and I was on the top of a cliff dropping off into the Knik Arm, the Cook Inlet. And across from me then was a big flat called the Susitna Flats. And 20 miles away was the Alaska Range of Mountains, which at that time were completely snow-capped. And then we had the big 20 miles of Susitna Flats in front of us, and then we're up on this hill. And we were looking at Bailey's Beads when suddenly someone said, look, the mountains have gone. And we looked up, and the Alaska Range of Mountains were gone. I mean, they were gone. You couldn't see them at all. And then we suddenly realized why. It was because they had dropped into night, and we were still in daytime. Hmm. And then we looked, we could see across the Susitna Flats the shadow of the moon coming at us at 1,400 miles an hour. The shadow just zipping across that 20 miles, and suddenly we were plunged into darkness. And we were... Then we could look up and see the totality of the sun. And then suddenly someone said, look, the mountains. And we looked again, and the mountains were back again.
Bruce, you are an excellent storyteller, but we're going to need to wrap up the show here in a few minutes. I mean, really, I'm fascinated by your experience, and I hope you have a great time enjoying this solar eclipse. I guess this is your second opportunity to do so. So thank you for calling and being part of our show today. Let me ask, as we are getting ready to wrap up our program, what else am I missing as we're discussing the concept of the solar eclipse? What else do our scientists or our planetarium educator want our listeners to know that we should be aware of? If we're going to be working that day, we're going to be in our normal environment here in Richmond or elsewhere. Actually, one of our listeners, I think somebody sent a message, when exactly will the eclipse be occurring, say, in Richmond? And I guess that'll be a little bit different for Lexington, a little bit different for Hazard, for our other points in our listening
differences. Area. In Richmond, the shadow of the moon will start passing, the moon will start passing in front of the sun, thus creating a shadow around 12 o'clock. It will be maximum at 2:30 in the afternoon. And then it's going to be gone by 3:30. Like Richard said, here it will be partial. Even 95%, the day is not going to get really that dark. If you see through a pair of glasses, you'll see a big chunk of the sun missing, but it's not going to be as visceral as the caller suggested.
Or is it the experience Richard that Dr. Gellerman had?
He will see the real thing.
What's going to happen down there in Bowling Green? You're going to have the stadium, the football stadium, filled with people. Any special events going on? Are they doing entertainment, music, or other activities, or throwing T-shirts out into the crowd? Or
So first, I want to totally second everything that Bruce expressed emotionally. My guess would be, although we've never met, that Bruce is a very quantitative and carefully spoken person, and yet you could hear that emotion.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, the words, the cold death, those thoughts really is the experience, and that this is an experience for everyone. This is not a science thing. This is a transformational human experience. Totality is an incredibly rare thing. To be this close to totality, you have to plan. You don't want to just blithely go down Monday, but with some planning to experience totality is worth the trouble. It's not going to come this close for a very long time. In Bowling Green, we're making that message clear to all the schools around us that are north of the totality line, just like Richmond is north of the totality line, inviting them to travel. The planning is daunting and scary for the superintendents and transportation directors, and it's really locking the schools up. I believe that the schools that are in session are doing a wonderful thing because the teachers will supervise and take good care of the kids, and we are inviting students to come to the WKU football stadium where there is a safe place to be. I can't make sure the roads move well for you, but we will keep you educationally entertained, not so much T-shirt cannons.
Okay, Dr. Richard Gelderman of Western Kentucky University. And again, Dr. Choka, the observatory on the campus at Eastern Kentucky University, in collaboration with the Hummel Planetarium. That's the site.
Yes.
It's right off on the EKU campus across from the Perkins Building. The College of Justice and Safety region on the campus at Eastern. Thank you all so much for this fascinating conversation. Dr. Richard Gelderman, Professor of Extragalactic Astrophysics at Western Kentucky University. Dr. Marco Choka, Physics and Astronomy Professor at Eastern. And Ida Bermudez, a Planetarium Educator at the Hummel Planetarium at Eastern Kentucky University. Thank you all so much, and happy Solstice Day a few days early. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers are Zach Redding, Devonna Gaines, and Julia Dake. Our technical director today, Roger Duvall. The show will be available online as a podcast, and we'll be repeating on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. We're always interested in hearing from you with your questions, comments, or show suggestions. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. I'm John Hingsbergen, and thank you for joining us for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.